We were praying for revival, believing God would do a big work in Syria. Then the war came. Now the terrorists are attacking Christian homes, churches, and even our children. Their goal is to empty Syria of its Christians. We hate the spirit of Islam that is destroying our country, but we love our Muslim neighbors. They come to us and say, "In the name of our God, terrorists rape and kill. Where is God?" We tell them about Jesus, and many are coming to know him. Still others say, "We are like living in hell." One day, while I was praying, I asked God what he would have me do to be his witness. But he only asked me, "Will you give me your life?" As I prayed, I understood he wanted all of me. And I said yes. If the time came, I was willing to die for Jesus. The next day, while I was praying, I asked God again what he would have me do. This time, he asked me, "Are you willing to give me your husband's life?" It is not easy to be ready to die. My husband and I prayed about this together. We said yes to God. The third day was the most difficult. On this day, God asked me if I was willing to give up my children's lives. The terrorists know who we are and that we share Jesus with Muslims. It is not safe for our family. My husband and I prayed and fasted, and together we agreed. God gave us our precious children. He has the freedom to take them back. When we agreed to put our children on the altar, I knew I had to tell them the truth. I told them that it was possible that men with swords may come through our door, men who didn't know Jesus. They may say bad things to us and try to force us to convert to Islam. But no matter what they say, we should not answer them. We should only tell them that Jesus loves them and that we forgive them. I told them that we might see some blood and have some pain, but it would only be for a little while. That we should just close our eyes, and when we open them, we will be with Jesus. Am I a good mother to have to tell my children such things? I also told them that as long as God wants us to be safe, we will be safe, that He is in control. Even during the bloodshed, during the killing, He is carrying our future. This is what it means to be a Christian in Syria.
Thank you. My name is Lincoln Brown. I stand up here on occasion in a variety of capacities, but today I'm here representing the Voice of the Martyrs. As Marty said, this is the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. Let's talk about who Voice of the Martyrs is and what it does. The verse that VOM uses is Hebrews 13:3. Remember them that are in bonds, as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity, as being yourselves also in the body. VOM does a number of things. They document and publicize acts of persecution around the world. They provide aid and comfort to persecuted Christians. They provide Bibles. They do all sorts of things. The mission statement, serving the persecuted church through practical and spiritual assistance while leading Christians in the free world into fellowship with them. Next slide, please. Now, the five main purposes there, I'm not going to read them all. They are all up there on the screen for you right now. But the biggest thing that we do at VOM is to encourage Christians who are being persecuted to fulfill the Great Commission, provide relief and spiritual support to those families, to face those who are opposing them in the gospel, and to do things that basically help them to do what they've been called to do, and to tell folks like you about this. Now let's move to meet the founder of Voice of the Martyrs. His name is Richard Wormbrand. Now, Richard was born in 1909 in Romania, and he was originally a stockbroker. And the story of how he came to Christ is a pretty neat one. I'm not going to give it all to you here, but you can pick up his book, Tortured for Christ, and it'll tell you all about that. During World War II, he and his wife preached in bomb shelters, pulled Jewish children out of the ghetto. They were beaten. They were arrested, almost executed once. Of course, then the war ended, and the Nazis left. Hooray. Then the communists showed up. Not hooray. When the communists took control of Romania, Richard was held for about 10 and a half years and continued to minister in the jail. It's an incredible story. You can't see this by looking at him, but here and in various places here, there are holes in his body because his captors in Romania would take red-hot pieces of iron and shove them into his body to make him stop. Make him stop preaching and make him stop converting people. And he didn't. He originally found a Voice of the Martyrs in 1967 on a typewriter. He had a typewriter. He typed out the first VOM newsletter and sent it around the world. By the time we got to the mid-80s, work was going on in 80 restricted countries with offices in 30 countries around the world. Now, we saw a little bit about that from the video today. Let's meet some of these folks. Let's go to Nigeria and ask, who are some of the faces of the persecuted church? This is Pastor Gwamba, Pastor Elu Gwamba. He was killed by Boko Haram insurgents in September. At least 18 other people were targeted in that attack. They targeted specific homes to burn. He left behind a family of his wife and four children. Let's go to Egypt. Iman Sarafim, 39-year-old Christian mother of five, kidnapped from her village in Minia, Egypt, by armed Muslim men. Now, the officials in Egypt said, well, she ran away and converted to Islam, but she escaped and she came back and she said, in no uncertain terms, I did not convert to Islam. I will not convert to Islam. Her abductor has said, if she doesn't come back, they'll come for her children next. Let's go back to Nigeria again. This is a tough one. John Yakubu, Nigerian, tortured by Boko Haram terrorists. They said, convert to Islam. He said, no. They fled the country. They fled the area to a refugee camp. But his family didn't have any money. And so he went back to his village to try to sell his animals. But Boko Haram saw him come to his house. And they said, okay, next chance, convert or die. He said, no. They tied him to a tree. You can see where they cut his hands with large knives. They said, convert to Islam. He said, no. He said, you can only kill my body. And so they cut him on the head and the back and the legs and left him to bleed to death. Now, when he was rescued, he said, I have forgiven the Islamic militants because they did not know what they were doing. Let's go back to Egypt one more time. This is Mary Sama George. She used to drive from Cairo to a nearby village to visit a poor family and help them out. March 28th, she was driving to Cairo. She was out in the suburbs, and a group of folks that are part of the Muslim Brotherhood saw the cross hanging from a rearview mirror. They jumped on the car to the point that you couldn't see the car because of all of the bodies piled on top of it. The roof began to collapse. They realized she was dying. They pulled her out and began using whatever it was they had at hand to beat her with, and began to pull her hair to the point that not just her hair came out, but pieces of her scalp. They set fire to the car, and they shot her. That is what, that gives you some idea of what Christians face in just two countries. So do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful even unto the point of death. I will give you life as your victor's crown. Revelation 2:10. This next one is a very tough video. It's a very difficult video. So far, all of the persecuted people we've seen have been adults, but Christians of all ages first face persecution.
Camerino and three of his little friends went into the woods looking for food. They were looking for little ground nuts and berries that were dried up on the trees that had fallen on the ground. While they were out in the bush, radical Islamic troops came into that area and saw these little boys, and they began to pursue them. What happened next was unbelievable. The Islamic soldiers surrounded the boys who were hiding in the tall grass, and they literally lit the grass on fire.
The next morning, we got up very early, packed up, and headed back. We were going back to Nimele. And on the way, we had stopped in this town, little village called Moli. And there was a commander there that Ray was going to interview. And as we were getting all set up and getting ready to do this interview, there was several women that came, and this one woman had asked us if we could come and look at this little boy. And so we slowly took the blanket off of him, lifted some of his clothing, and even as we did that, some of his skin was coming off. He was over 40% burned. You could smell the burning skin. It stunk very bad in that building. He had flies all over him. Debbie, who was on our team, who was a nurse, took a look at him, and she said, "We need to get him out of here now."
After we found Camerino, the team, as we sat there and we looked at him, we were just in shock at what had taken place. We all reached down and grabbed the plastic that he was laying on. There were about six of us, and we just gently picked him up. And while we were picking him up, Camerino was in such pain that you could just hear him going, "Oh, oh, oh," and he was screaming while we were picking him up. And all the while, we were hauling him to the four-wheel drive, and we gently slid him into the back of our truck. And then we began the five-hour journey back to the base camp. For us, it was really a very emotional time because of the pain he was going through. But just the fact that God had allowed us to see this little boy and to be able to actually save his life and bring him back to the hospital.
Okay, let's talk about how widespread persecution is. You can see by the map, it's all over the map. Last week, Leonie talked about the 1040 window. That also applies to the persecuted church as well. The gray areas, some maps, they look green. They're being monitored by VOM because there's a trend toward persecuting Christians in those nations. Restricted nations are kind of that maroon sort of color, kind of red to maroon. That's where government policies or practices will keep Christians from having Bibles or Christian literature, and places where the government says it's okay to harass Christians, to imprison them, to kill them, to take their property because of their witness. Now, the hostile nations are in yellow, and that's where governments sort of try to prevent violence against the Christians, but they're still victims of violence because of their witness. Quick show of hands. Let's go to the next slide, please. Who brought their Bibles to church today? Okay, so everybody brought a Bible. You can reach a pew Bible, right? Okay, they're pretty easy to get in the U.S., right? Go to Walmart, Kmart, Joshua's Journey, any bookstore, just about any store. I've got three boxes of them in my trunk right now. But everybody remember Jerry Maguire, that movie? What was a famous line from Jerry Maguire? Show me the money. Okay, in the count of three. One, two, three, show me the Bibles! I don't see, some of you were telling me a fib. You didn't, okay, there we are. All right, I was worried about that. In restricted and hostile nations, Bibles are hard to get. Sometimes almost impossible. In the underground churches, there may only be one copy. Sometimes there's one copy for an entire village. And everybody takes a piece and memorizes it and teaches other people. And one of the things VOM does is provide Bibles. Now watch what happens when a box of Bibles is delivered in China. Hebrews 4:12, for the word of God is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirits, joints and marrows. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. Now, in the next slide here, you can see Bibles being shipped to believers in Vietnam. Now, in the next slide, we've got over in North Korea, Christians have to hide their Bibles in floors and in walls because you will disappear into a black hole if the North Korean government finds you with a Bible. You will disappear. Lower left, you see a blood-stained Bible. That's what those stains are. That's blood that was found on the border of North Korea. In the upper right corner is one of the Bibles VOM provides to believers in North Korea. And as you can see in the next slide, VOM delivered 1.2 million Bibles to restricted places last year. So what can we do? If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. That's in 1 Corinthians 12:26. Now, the persecuted church, what do they want? They want our prayers. They want tools so they can continue to evangelize, so they can continue to witness. They don't want the persecution to end. That is the strange thing. We might pray that people will leave them alone. They don't want that. If you go and read the stories, you'll find how many of them feel just absolutely blessed to suffer for Christ. They need Bibles. They need Christian literature to keep on doing the work of the kingdom. Ephesians 6:19 says, pray also for me that whenever I speak, words may be given me so that I will fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel. One of the things you can do is you can pray. Every time you are in prayer, remember the persecuted church. You know, when you're in VOM training, one of the things they do is they have you pick a country and you just pray for that country throughout a week. You can go to the VOM website, icommittopray.com, and there's a growing list of your brothers and sisters in these persecuted countries that pray, that need your prayer, and also ways that you can find a country or find a particular person who is in need of prayer. You can also get emailed updates for new prayer requests at icommittopray.com. The other thing you do is action packs. There's a lot of stuff on there. Basically, what an action pack is, it's a care package. And you can put together all sorts of stuff and send it to these folks overseas. Persecuted Christians usually at the bottom of the rung in their society's ladder. They usually have to scratch to make out a living with very low-paying jobs. Action packs do two things. One, helps them along. Two, it reminds them that people here have not forgotten about them. You can put them together yourself, or you can send money to VOM and they'll do it for you. Either way, you know, we also take financial contributions and letter writing. If you go to the VOM website, there's a tab under Get Involved. That takes you to a page where you can write letters to Christians that are in prison and they show up in their own language. It's a little drop-down menu. It's really easy to do. Now, you got to pay for the postage, but the letter practically writes itself. Now, sometimes they don't get the letters, but the jailers do. And the jailers, they know that we know. And that has an effect on the jailers. So the letter writing and the care packages, the action packs, those are great projects for youth groups and their families. And basically, one of the strongest things you can do is educate yourself and educate other people. Their story needs to be told to the world, and especially needs to be told to other Christians, so that we remember to pray for them and support them, and that we realize how blessed we are in this country. So please, you know, tell that story so we realize how blessed we are, and we remember to pray and support them. Thank you very much.